I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering you a safe space if you're an independent thinker out there, and I'm going to call on those skills today. We're going to talk about the mess in Afghanistan, and I'm going to pose some different takes on what's happening and what has happened over the years. I would imagine a lot of people are more receptive. It's the safe space for a lot of people is going to be the GOP talking points, but I don't use those. I haven't used them since I came on, and I'm not about to start now. What's going on in Afghanistan was entirely foreseeable. Matter of fact, predictable. Biden is an absolute joke, a complete inept guy. And when I look at a Secretary of Defense get off a plane wearing a face mask and a face shield, you just kind of know whose hands our military is in and our foreign policy is in. I'm sure that Joe Biden has found ways to make this worse than it had to be. But I guess for a sneak peek into kind of my views, I'll summarize it in this way. This is the way I see what has transpired in Afghanistan, not just over the past several days, past few weeks, but over the past 20 years. The war criminal George W. Bush filled a bowl full of crap, just all the way up to the brim. And when he left office, he tossed it. He tossed it to the war criminal Barack Obama. And the war criminal Barack Obama caught that, while a little bit sloshed out the sides onto the American people and our troops and a bunch of people in Afghanistan, he kept it steady enough and just found a way to add more crap to the bowl. When he campaigned, he said he was going to clean out that bowl full of crap, but he just couldn't seem to get around to get it done. And then the war criminal Obama left and tossed the bowl full of crap to the war criminal Donald Trump, who again caught it and, while a little more sloshed out on the little people, he kept it steady, and again, he added a little bit more crap to it. He campaigned on cleaning out this bowl of crap, but he hired all the people responsible for filling the bowl full of crap, and so, of course, he had to keep it. And then in January, the war criminal Trump tossed an even fuller bowl of crap to the war criminal Joe Biden and said, "Hey, take care of this. Clean out this bowl. I was going to do it, but I just didn't get around to it." And the war criminal Joe Biden is so inept that he didn't really catch the ball. It really kind of just bounced off of him, sloshed around a little bit, and ended up on top of his head. And that's where we find ourselves today. So, yeah, not exactly the Republican or Democrat talking points you'll be hearing all day, but we will talk about this passed down giant bowl full of crap that the war criminal presidents that have run the United States for the past 20 years have been tossing back and forth. There's actually another event that's going on this month before we get into Afghanistan stuff that we need to talk about, because it's actually one of the reasons Afghanistan's happened. Most people will never tie these things together. I got a couple of quotes of the day. One is from Andrew Torba. He is the guy who created the Gab network, the free speech Gab. He said, "The goal of the establishment conservative networks like Fox is to feed conservatives just enough breadcrumbs to string them along and keep them from talking about the real issues in the country." And that's true. Fox News will be pointing to this as all of a Biden problem today. And again, Biden made it worse. I'm sure Biden did basically everything wrong you could possibly do wrong, but there was no right. The right thing would have been to never gone into Afghanistan in the first place. But actually, in this... Andrew Torbett Gab apparently is in some kind of a feud with Dan Bongino, and he was talking about Dan Bongino. I know a lot of Dan Bongino fans out there right now. Dan Bongino will tell you today it's all Biden's fault. If Trump had done it, if Trump had gotten us out of Afghanistan, it would have gone beautifully. Well, I got to tell you, that's just not true. But then here is, we actually have an anniversary happened yesterday that went by without any mention on mainstream media. I doubt it will get any mention on conservative media. It will not be mentioned really anywhere, yet it is at the root of so many of our problems. 50 years ago today, this speech was made.
The third indispensable element in building the new prosperity is closely related to creating new jobs and halting inflation. We must protect the position of the American dollar as a pillar of monetary stability around the world. In the past 7 years, there's been an average of one international monetary crisis every year. Now, who gains from these crises? Not the working man, not the investor, not the real producers of wealth. The gainers are the international money speculators. Because they thrive on crises, they help to create them. In recent weeks, the speculators have been waging an all-out war on the American dollar. The strength of a nation's currency is based on the strength of that nation's economy. And the American economy is by far the strongest in the world. Accordingly, I have directed the Secretary of the Treasury to take the action necessary to defend the dollar against the speculators. I have directed Secretary Connally to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar into gold or other reserve assets.
Now, you just heard this is Richard Nixon taking us off of the gold standard, unpegging the dollar from gold. You just heard him say temporary. Hello? 50 years later? That's quite a temporary program they've got.
Except in amounts and conditions determined to be in the interest of monetary stability and in the best interest of the United States. Now, what does this action, which is very technical, what does it mean for you? Let me lay to rest the bugaboo of what is called devaluation. If you want to buy a foreign car or take a trip abroad, market conditions may cause your dollar to buy slightly less. But if you are among the overwhelming majority of Americans who buy American-made products in America, your dollar will be worth just as much tomorrow as it is today.
And that is in comparison to 1971. This was August 15th of 1971. The U.S. dollar has lost, anyone? 85% of its value. That's Richard Nixon telling you he's temporarily taking us off the gold standard to maintain the value of the U.S. dollar. It's lost 85% of its value since then. Alan Greenspan, before he became Fed chair, before he decided to go over to the dark side, Alan Greenspan said, in the absence of the gold standard, there is no way to protect savings from the confiscation through inflation. There is no safe store of value. The financial policy of the welfare state requires that there is no way for the owners of wealth to protect themselves. This is the shabby secret of the welfare statists' tirades against gold. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the confiscation of wealth. Gold stands in the way of this insidious process. It stands as a protector of property rights. If one grasps this, one has no difficulty in understanding the statist antagonism towards the gold standard. That's what Alan Greenspan said originally, and then he became the Federal Reserve chairman, and he went over to the dark side and abandoned all of his previous beliefs. He was right back then. They have stolen for the last 50 years your wealth, your children's wealth, the American dream. Listen to some of these statistics, and this is why I tell you this is so important. Nobody's talking about it, and that's really kind of the whole point of this show is to try to bring up some stories that are not covered, that should be covered, to make people understand exactly what the problem is here. It's not your liberal neighbor. It's not your Trump-supporting cousin. In the third quarter of 1989, the net worth of the top 1% stood at $4.9 trillion, which amounted to about 6.3 times the $737 billion net worth of the bottom 50% of households. That was 1989. The top 1% owned 6.3 times what the bottom 50% owned. And that's when the Fed's balance sheet stood at about $300 billion, and it had taken 75 years to get there from the time the Fed's opening in November of 1914. Fast forward to the present, the Fed's balance sheet is 28 times larger at $8.3 trillion. Now, here's where it shows you why this matters. There's absolutely no doubt as to who benefited from all that massive monetary inflation. That is, the net worth of the top 1% is now $41.52 trillion, where it stands 16 times larger than the $2.6 trillion of wealth held by the bottom 50% of households. The top 1% has increased their lead over the bottom 50% of people. They used to have 6.3 times the wealth. Now they have 16 times the wealth of the bottom 50%. That's 1% versus the bottom 50%. No, you didn't just tune into some AOC radio show. There's a lot of people in the 1% who have earned every nickel they have. It's the 0.1% where most of those gains took place that have exploited what Richard Nixon did and taking us off the gold standard, what the Federal Reserve is doing each and every single day. In stealing wealth, we've seen the largest wealth transfer from the working and middle classes in the United States up to the oligarchs here in this country. And it all started 50 years ago yesterday, with Richard Nixon unleashing the printing presses and destroying your dollar by 85% since then, and it's only accelerating. Seems like something we should be talking about. I'll be right back.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side.
Caller called during the break and reminded me, you know, back when Nixon took us off the gold standard, gold was trading at $35 an ounce. It's around $1,700 now. The poor gold bugs, they're right as rain. You know, gold is a store of value. It's could do a whole show on that, and I'm not necessarily the best to talk about it. But, people who buy gold, they're trying to preserve their wealth, protect their money from inflation, because gold typically holds its value. What they say is basically anytime you have an ounce of gold, you can buy a really nice suit. It doesn't matter how much a suit costs. Gold kind of mirrors that. It's a way to protect your wealth. It feels like these are the days, many years now, these are the days where it feels like with all this inflation and deficit spending that gold should be going through the roof, but somehow they are holding gold underwater. Silver is another thing. Silver is certainly cheap right now. If you had some money that you wanted to put aside and protect your money from inflation, gold or silver is great. But I tell you what, don't think you're gonna knock the cover off the ball anytime soon. It's been well over a decade coming. It feels like gold should have really taken off. It had a big run after the financial crisis and then got slapped back down and has been teetering, trying to get past those records for so long. But there's so much dishonesty in our monetary system. But the bottom line is, you know, this 50 year situation of taking us off the gold standard, it has led to all this Fed money printing. You can't go off and fight these Afghanistan wars. These things are all tied together. You don't get the huge wealth inequality that has made so many people dissatisfied. A lot of the social problems in this country is because of a wealth inequality that has been exacerbated by what Nixon did. And Nixon did it, in my opinion, as a response to what Johnson was doing when he was spending endlessly in the Great Society and the Vietnam War. And so if we got this monetary system under control, I think we'd see a lot of problems go away. If we really had free markets, I had a long conversation yesterday with my son trying to explain to him what free markets and capitalism actually is. It's not on the on big scales. We don't see free markets and capitalism. We see cronyism. We see manipulations. And free market capitalism can be such a beautiful thing. It just really is. It brings prosperity to a lot of people. It gives a lot of people just huge opportunities. Has a way of kind of spreading out wealth. The system we have right now is to concentrate it up at the very tippy top, that 0.1%. So it just seems like something we're missing something to not understand that. It's a story I ran across, too. The wealthy are starting to take their toys and bug out, too. I got to tell you, what was this story? They're having a record. People are renouncing their citizenship. IRS lists the record number of wealthy Americans becoming ex-Americans in 2020. It was in 2020, 6,705 Americans gave up their citizenship, a 260% increase from 2019. And they're saying that this trend right now is slowed because they're not processing, you know, with all the travel restrictions and reduced productivity at places that would process these things. It's kind of slowed down, but looks like a lot of the wealthy are kind of taking their toys and they're going to go ahead and go. And I got to tell you, a lot of people will see that as unpatriotic. As it stands right now, I'll probably be seeking to join them. And the problem is, I don't stay here and fight. It's worth fighting for. You know, my point of view of what would fix the country is so small right now. I'm not going anywhere anytime soon. But if I have to live out some golden years, I got to tell you, it may not be here. I may not be able to afford to live here. I may have to find a little third world country where they leave you alone to be able to live any quality of life. But you've got, I mean, conservatives should be our hope here in this country, but you've got conservatives out there that are trying to use a political party. They think that if they can just get Trump back in office, this is the same Trump who was taking your money. He didn't campaign on it. He never talked about ending the IRS, the income tax, ending the Federal Reserve. Hell, he was begging, jawboning the Federal Reserve to do exactly the things that are creating this huge problem we have right now. He was signing huge deficits into law, big spending bills with only words. You remember after the first big spending bill Trump signed, he said, well, I'm going to sign this one, but don't you dare send me another bill like this. And then he signed three more with barely any protestations. And towards the end of his term, he was talking about a $2 trillion infrastructure package himself. We like to forget about that and just talk about Biden's ridiculous infrastructure package. Donald Trump was begging the Federal Reserve to take interest rates to zero and even negative. It would have decimated the middle class to have negative interest rates. It's already slow killing the middle class to have these zero interest rates. Trump couldn't abide by the 2%. It's just everybody's lost the plot. Liberals and the left, they don't care about freedom anymore. We already know that they want to use the government for everything, but good Lord, they've given up all of their civil liberties too. And it doesn't matter what it's for hate speech or COVID. And so I don't really know what there is left to fight for if the vast majority of people are lined up on two sides, both flailing in the wrong direction. It seems to me, I mean, even conservatives really in this country. And, you know, I was a conservative all coming through my 20s. Big, huge Bush supporter, big anti-Clinton guy. I liked George H.W. Bush. Oh, my gosh, I'm so ashamed of myself. I need to go take a shower during the break, even thinking about supporting that war criminal. But it seems to me at this point, you know, how many conservatives stood down last year and continue to stand down now, and many people, even on the right now, are all fine with, you know, vaccination cards. Not as many as the left, no doubt about that. There certainly is a streak of independence. Many people on the right understand what's going on, but there's just It's gotten to me where when I look around, and particularly when I looked around last year and just thought, with conservatives, it kind of seems like as long as you let them keep their guns, now they can't use them. You know, as soon as a conservative ever were to actually use their gun for the reason that the Second Amendment exists, which is to oppose a tyrannical government, as soon as you use your guns, that government, that military, that police state that you have cheered for is going to come and crush you like a bug. But as long as you let conservatives keep their guns, you can pretty much take anything else away from them you want. And there's this, it feels to me, it just, again, I'm an outsider, not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat. It feels to me from looking from the outside, the Republicans are just clinging to this guns thinking that, well, I'm still free as long as I can have a firearm. Now, I believe you should still have a firearm. Well, what good is a firearm? They don't need to disarm you if you will give up all of your rights, if you will give up a third of your wealth every single year without a shot being fired. You know, you don't pay that third. You end up in a cage, and your conservative neighbors say, well, I pay mine. You should have paid yours. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just a little depressing. I guess they talk about it was only 3% of the people. Was that the statistic for the Revolutionary War? About 3% of the people really got things kicked off. And I'm not suggesting we have to do that, but what I'm saying is that maybe a small, powerful idea can be enough to change history. But right now, I don't see it. And I think that probably the next few years are going to kind of be the tail of the tape. We're going to kind of see, aren't we? We're going to get, when I come back, into a little bit of COVID numbers, and then we're going to get into the Afghanistan stuff. Really heartbreaking stuff to see the people over there who were counting on us, that kind of threw in their lot with us, I guess, or just they're being slaughtered probably as we speak. It will teach a lot of countries a lot of lessons. You know, this has been a debacle from the beginning to the end. You're going to have endless people. You're going to have General Jack Keane go on to Fox News today and tell you that Biden has botched this and that we never should have left. That's General Jack Keane's. Of course, he sits on the board of directors of four different defense contractors, last I checked. So you're going to have an endless stream of Republicans saying either we shouldn't have left, Liz Cheney's already piping in, Trump made it bad, and then Biden just made it worse. Liz Cheney would want us committed there for forever as well, since her father was one of the architects of this catastrophe in the first place. So we'll have plenty to talk about that. There's also some soldiers who are asking some very painful questions of themselves. And one in particular, we'll address some of his comments about Afghanistan a little bit later. But I did want to get to a little bit of COVID stuff before we get into that. So we'll do that when we come back. Stay with me. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. This was an interesting story that I really was not familiar with. We're going to talk a little bit about COVID, but one of the things that we should learn from COVID, we won't. What we should learn is that, you know, we can't control things. There's just a horrific story about the earthquake down in Haiti. Man, those poor Haitians, good grief. They you want to talk about rough. We've got a country here where we look for microaggressions to get outraged about. We have to go to Twitter to find something to offend us. These Haitians are beating back death and disease and famine and earthquakes, hurricanes, on a monthly basis down there. We're running around trying to get offended through a Facebook post. I mean, but the thing about COVID is that we've got our gods here. The god Anthony Fauci, if you just give him enough power, he's smart enough man, he can fix it all. Thomas Dobbs believes if you just, you know, the problem is not this virus, it's the fact that some people just refuse to wear the mask or refuse to get vaccinated. They've got all the answers. They can control this thing if everybody just does what they say. And the simple fact of the matter is that goes back to what I've been saying for a year now, virus gonna virus. And this was an interesting story about King Canute. I didn't really know, wasn't really familiar with the story, but King Canute, remembered for conquering kingdoms across Northern Europe and becoming king of England, Denmark, Norway, and areas of Sweden. In the early 11th century, King Canute, while at the peak of his power, set out to demonstrate to his fawning courtiers that the limited power of royal edicts. After having his throne placed by the sea's edge, he sat down and commanded the tide to stop rising. When the water began washing over his feet, he declared, quote, "Let all men know how empty and worthless is the power of kings," unquote. Nearly 1,000 years later, facing a different force of nature, COVID-19, an entire global generation of presidents, prime ministers, governors, mayors, public health officials, scientists, and citizens is being given the same lesson. However, where Canute's lessons sprang from his humility, This lesson springs from the hubris of the present-day ruling class to the credulity of the masses who place far too much faith in their ruler's power. I've started to get into some conversations with my son about climate change. He's a young guy in his 20s, wants to see the planet saved, trying to walk him back from some of the climate change hysteria, separate what is provable by what's not provable, all these kinds of things. We're having these conversations. And I pointed out to him, you know, they can't predict earthquakes. They can't predict hurricanes. They can't predict the weather. They can't predict heart attacks. They can't predict really much of anything. But they tell you they're in total control of it. If you just give them enough power and enough money, they'll fix it all. And that just simply is not the way it works. Check out these numbers. This is very odd. These are going to be very odd numbers to you for what we're told is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. I believe that in the United States, they are just flat out lying to us. Because I don't think there's really any way that geography accounts for the what is taking place in Israel, in England, and in Australia. You're talking about different corners of the world, yet we are led to believe that here in the United States, we're experiencing something totally different than these other countries when it comes to who's succumbing to coronavirus, who's being hospitalized. Here they say it's 97% are all unvaccinated. I find that almost impossible to believe, particularly with all of this, just the stories of people that we know who are vaccinated that have ended up in hospitals, who we know, Lee Vance, is fully vaccinated and passed away from COVID. Listen to these numbers. These are from England. They have 300,000 cases of the Delta variant in England. Of the 300,000, 148,956 of them are vaccinated. And 151,054 are unvaccinated. That's a 50-50 split. Strange that England is not experiencing the pandemic of the unvaccinated. It's 50-50. When it comes to ER visits, there have been 24,710. Of those, 9,700 had the vaccination. That's 39%. Not exactly this. We're being told here it's only, you know, 2%, 3%, maybe, tops. It's 97% of hospitalizations, office visits, and deaths are all unvaccinated people. In England, 40%, 39% of their ER visits have been in the vaccinated groups. But it gets worse. Hospitalizations in Great Britain, 8,189. Of those, 43% or 3,491 have been vaccinated. 43%. Unvaccinated, 57%. And then you get to this number. In England, with the COVID variant, with the Delta variant, they've had 742 deaths. And this is really kind of the big mamu, isn't it? Isn't this what we're really trying to avoid? I mean, I'm not really sure. I think the medical establishment is really more interested in us not making them work too hard rather than actually saving lives. They want us to spare the hospitals from being overwhelmed. But this seems like a pretty big one when it comes to deaths. Is it true in Great Britain what they tell us it is in the United States, where all of the people here that are dying are all unvaccinated? That's why there's this big push to get vaccinated. Lee Vance was just an outlier. That actor I told you about the other day that had gotten his third jab who died, he was just an outlier. In Great Britain, 742 deaths. Of those, 489 or 66% of them have been vaccinated. Only 34% had not been vaccinated. 66% of the deaths in Great Britain are vaccinated. This is supposedly attributed to the Delta strain. And yet somehow, in the United States, it's completely different. I find that extremely hard to believe. England never... Yeah, really, what's going on in England? I don't know if you've been seeing the protests. The Canadians, whoo, Montreal, Quebec. You should go check out the protests that went on in Canada, finally. You know, Canada's where we've seen some really horrible things, particularly that pastor who the Gestapo came in during one of his services and tried to escort him out, and he cussed him all the way down the stairs out into the front walkway and into their cars. He got them out of there. They came back for him, closed his church. The Canadians have really been very submissive, had really horrific restrictions on them in parts of Canada. Yesterday or this weekend in Montreal, hundreds of thousands of people. I love the drone footage when they go out and they really go up and take a look at these crowds. Streets jam-packed full of people that are going against these restrictions. France is on their fifth weekend of protests there. Australia has been seeing some protests down there, but they are cracking down hard. I think I've got a clip of what they're proposing for the Australians in terms of fines for... Well, I'm going to have to let you listen to how particular they are in Australia. But anyway, in England, official data shows that England's lockdown caused an extra 1 million people to become addicted to alcohol since the start of the pandemic. Before the pandemic began, government police polling indicated that there were around 1.5 million alcoholics in the country, meaning people who drank at least 50 units every week. But this jumped to just shy of 2.5 million this summer, which experts have blamed on the endless cycle of virus-controlling restrictions. According to alcohol abuse expert Dr. Tony Rao of King's College London, quote, the impact of the COVID pandemic on alcohol use, wrong, has nothing to do with the pandemic. They are blaming COVID for a whole lot of deaths, a whole lot of problems out there, but I have not seen one bit of evidence that COVID makes you an alcoholic. So it has nothing to do with the pandemic. But he says the impact of the COVID pandemic on alcohol use has been devastating. The latest data, taken together with the highest number of alcohol-specific deaths on record, is a stark warning for the government. Alcohol charities are warning of a crisis, quote, that is happening now. After Public Health England revealed that, quote, deaths directly caused by alcohol soared 20% during the first year of the pandemic. So another great success. These people... Modern-day England could learn a lesson from King Canute from the 11th century, who tried to prove to people that the government, and particularly your rulers, cannot control nature. It doesn't matter how much you deify these people, how much credit you give them for just being able to put in the policies that can control nature, they cannot do it. And then there was this one. Now, I could not independently verify this. We live in a time where you honestly don't know what's real and what's not anymore. But this was put out on a post, and it's attributed to The Hill. Here's the headline. Fully vaccinated man dies of COVID-19. Daughter says he was cautious. It does not have a date on this. I went to The Hill website to try to verify this story, and I couldn't find it, but The Hill is not... You know, if this thing is more than a week old, The Hill is constantly refreshing headlines. So I couldn't find it on there, but it attributes this to The Hill. But here's the body of the story. And like I say, I don't know if this is real or not. This is not the Babylon Bee. It's attributed to The Hill newspaper or online. I don't know if they do a printed edition or not. Here's the story. A woman's fully vaccinated father died from COVID-19. Doctor said the condition of the father would have been worse had he not been vaccinated at all. I hope that's satire, but at this point, do we really know? And then there was this. This is in Israel again. Israel reporting all kinds of different... We should be looking to Israel. Mainstream media completely silent on what's happened in Israel. I played the clips last week. In Israel, 95%. I think their hospitalizations, everything was in the 90-95 range. 90-95% of the people hospitalized had been vaccinated. 90-95% of the people who were dying had been vaccinated in Israel. We ignore that here and pretend it's completely opposite for some reason. Here are new numbers out of Israel. In Israel, they have had a 25% increase in cardiac arrest and heart attacks in ages 16 to 29. They have had an 83.6% increase in heart attacks in women ages 20 to 29. A 25% increase in cardiac arrests and heart attacks in ages 16 to 29. And an 83.6% increase in heart attacks of women 20 to 29 in Israel. According to the study, this increase was correlated with the mass vaccination of Israeli citizens. Well, this is something we need to be on guard for here. We know that these vaccines even admit that one of the problems of these things is spike protein getting into the heart, damaging heart muscles, and creating these other problems. An 83% in heart attacks in women in their 20s should be something we are looking at and something that people in America should be given to consider for women in their 20s that are considering getting the shot. Of course, they're not studying it again. What we do here in America is pretend these things aren't happening and just continue to say safe and effective 97%. It's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. I hope the truth comes out about that. I just cannot believe that's the case. I'll be right back. All right, we only got a few minutes left in this hour. We're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit about Afghanistan. I particularly wanted to kind of address a soldier who's looking at what's happening right now and just thinking, what transpired? What did my friends get blown up for? I have some ideas. But I've taken it upon myself with this show to make sure that, you know, people get thanked. I think too often, you know, I'll tell you right now that the mega corporations, the oligarchs in society, thank you for sacrificing any return on your savings in savings accounts or money markets or CDs, because every nickel you don't get in interest is money that they save on interest, and so they thank you. They don't do it directly, but I feel like I should pass it along. They must appreciate it, so I want to make sure the U.S. taxpayer always gets thanked when they need to. And I think it's a time for another thanks to the U.S. taxpayer. And this one comes from the Taliban. I will pass it along to them. What are they? Do they speak Farsi? I don't know. But I'm sure that the translation would be, you know, I'm sure that they would want to thank you. There's a France 24 story. The United States spent billions supplying the Afghan military with the tools to defeat the Taliban, but the rapid capitulation of the armed forces means that weaponry is now fueling the insurgents' astonishing battlefield successes. Joe Biden said, quote, "We provided our Afghan partners with all the tools. Let me emphasize, all the tools." But Afghan defense forces have shown little appetite for that fight, and in the tens of thousands have been laying down their arms only for the Taliban to immediately pick them up. The Taliban's social media is awash with videos of Taliban fighters seizing weapons caches, the majority supplied by Western powers. Again, thank you to the U.S. taxpayer. So when you see this march on Kabul and the airports, we're having our Saigon moment in Afghanistan right now. Understand that you, the taxpayer, and particularly those who cheered for the huge military budgets, the Taliban seriously thanks you. And it's gotten into some serious hardware, too. Taliban has not been known for their air force. These are ground guerrilla fighters, obviously quite successful. They vanquished the Soviet Union. They have now vanquished the United States. They're 2-0 against superpowers now, and they've done this for apparently hundreds or thousands of years. Other empires have sought to conquer Afghanistan, and they have repelled them as well. But the Afghanis have never been known, or the Taliban themselves have never been known for their air force until now. Multiple videos out of Afghanistan circulating widely on Saturday show an unusual and true first. The Taliban, quote, have operationalized at least two helicopters captured in Herat. According to a regional correspondent on the ground, an analyst at the D.C.-based Middle East Institute writes, quote, after capturing several helicopters in Kandahar, a Taliban-trained pilot reportedly flew an Mi-17 chopper earlier today right around the city. It's confirmed the bearded Islamist rapidly overrunning cities while U.S. forces are in retreat literally have air power now. So I've got to believe, I'm no fan of the Taliban, but I've got to believe there's something inside them that would want to get this message to the U.S. taxpayer, and that is thank you. Thank you for the helicopters. Much like ISIS appreciated the, what did they end up with, 700 armored vehicles just in the past year. I think that was during, was that during 2020 or sometime this year, as they've overrun different areas where the U.S. taxpayer has cheered the big military budgets and all of the hardware. Jack Keane, the guy who constantly comes on to Fox News to tell you that it's time to ramp up another war or keep one going, that rock-jawed conservative on Fox News that goes on Lou Dobbs nightly, he'll be there tonight. He thanks you. Last I saw, he was on the board of directors, possibly chairman of the board of AM General that makes the Humvee. So every Taliban Humvee that's being driven around is money in Jack Keane's pocket. So there's a lot of thanks that needs to come from the defense contractors all the way up to the Taliban right now, thanking the U.S. taxpayer for all of their hard work. I mean, you get up in the morning, it's Monday, you had to get up after a weekend, go to work today to make sure that you're putting your pennies in the coffer to make sure the Taliban is fully armed. And that's exactly what has transpired. We'll talk more about it next hour.
I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing hooky.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. And get ready. You're going to hear something different here than you're going to hear on Fox News from Tom Cotton. I heard a clip. I didn't pull it up. I really couldn't stomach it, of Mike Pompeo talking about all the great successes when he was in office and how Biden has really screwed up this Afghanistan withdrawal. I'm sure Joe Biden has screwed up the Afghanistan withdrawal. There's no doubt in my mind that he's screwed it up. But as I described earlier, the succession of the last 20 years has been one war criminal president tossing a big bowl of crap to the next war criminal president. And Donald Trump tossed it to Joe Biden and told him to clean it out. I have absolutely no tolerance whatsoever for listening to Mike Pompeo or Donald Trump or any Trump supporters saying Trump would have gotten this right. Trump had 4 years to get this right, didn't he? He campaigned on getting it right, getting us out of these foreign wars, but he just didn't quite get around to actually getting us out of any of these countries. He moved some troops. He stopped paying ISIS. That was a nice touch. I can certainly appreciate that one, but certainly was not the not the home run I was expecting from the Trump administration. The U.S. now is asking for a timeout. Holy cow. U.S. officials are now appealing to the Taliban. This was probably prior to yesterday, so I guess the Taliban didn't grant this. U.S. officials were appealing to the Taliban to wait for the completion of the U.S. evacuation, saying that doing so would increase, quote, the likelihood that both the international community and Afghans will accept the Taliban's entry into the capital. Time out, okay? Yeah, we've occupied your nation. We invaded you, occupied your nation for 20 years. Turned some of your cities into rubble, but hey, time out, okay? Everybody will be nice. Can you give us a few moments here to just kind of collect our stuff and go home? You know, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. There's already talk right now. Oh, this is going to create, and this is what you're going to hear from your conservative talk show host. It's going to turn Afghanistan another ground base of terror. You know what creates terrorists? Occupying a country for 20 years, turning Syria into rubble, turning Libya into a place where they now have open-air slave markets, occupying Iraq. For 17 years now, 18 years in Iraq now, they've asked us to leave and we've said no. You want to know what breeds terrorism? It's not because our little girls get to vote. It's not the George Bush, they hate us for our freedom. They really don't like the bombs dropping on their heads over there. They really don't like occupation by a foreign country over there. we wouldn't like it here. That's how I kind of know that that's probably unpopular. And Iraq has been just flat out telling us, get out of our country. And we just say, nah, we're good. We'll let you know when we leave your country. So this was entirely foreseeable. It was predictable. It was predictable the day we marched in there. And as Ron Paul said, we marched right in. We can march right out. This is why Donald Trump doesn't get some kind of a pass for me, because 4 years just wasn't quite enough for the planning stage. As a matter of fact, and here we go. Go ahead and get ready to click off. Go to another WGOP station. Donald Trump was a coward to toss this into another administration, even if he thought he was going to be reelected. He kind of hedged his bets there a little bit, had 4 years and tossed the deadline for removing our troops into another administration, just on the off chance maybe he didn't win. He wouldn't have to deal with this. And now to sit in the back seat and judge how it's going impresses me none. Now, I'm sure Joe Biden has made an absolute mess of this. He's completely disengaged. It's not even Biden. We know Biden has no... He has nothing to do with the planning of this, nothing. It's the Pentagon. It's the Pentagon and your government. And I know I keep harping on this, and maybe it's not effective. Maybe it's rude. Maybe it's judgy. Maybe it's pompous. I don't know what it is. But for the people that have been cheering decade after decade after decade, every time a Republican comes and tells you they're going to give you these big, giant military budgets and you cheer for these things, this is what you've created. It is the Pentagon that is responsible for this and the last 20 years of catastrophe that is Afghanistan. This is what the Pentagon has created. And what do they get for this huge screw-up? From even the conservatives out there and Democrats, they've been tricked into supporting wars now, too. When they got their war criminal Barack Obama and their war criminal Bill Clinton were in office and told them that dropping bombs is now cool and loving and liberal. What do you do to the Pentagon when they make these massive mistakes? You give them more money. Because they scare you with this, oh, we lost another simulation. We need more. We had to rebuild the military under Donald Trump, right? Did any heads roll for where the $6 trillion in a few years previous had gone to our military? No heads rolled. Nobody got fired. But we just had to, Trump had to rebuild the military. You know what that's code words for? He has to fatten the wallets of the defense contractors who contribute to his campaign and Republican campaigns. I got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
Yeah, Mike, I was listening to this thing, and it reminded me of something I was reading recently about the cost of the embassy we built over there, which was now abandoned. Over $700 million to build the embassy.
Oh.
How can you even possibly spend that much money?
Well, I believe the Iraqi embassy was $1 billion or $1.5 billion, wasn't it? It's the largest embassy in the world.
Well, I guess we still have that one, don't we?
Not for now.
I don't know. But the numbers are staggering. There's no way to honestly spend this kind of money.
Right.
There's no honesty in this. It's got to be 70% fraud, payoffs. I don't know what's happened to the American people that they tolerate it. And we keep sending the same kind of people back to Washington who allow it.
And not even tolerate it. I am telling you, and I guess I've come across as I'm scolding or something. I don't know. But maybe you can explain to me, why do Republicans who can see... Republicans have known since the 1980s we're paying $400 for a hammer. This is, you know, and $1,100 for a toilet seat. That was a talking point back in the 1980s when they discovered this stuff. So why have Republicans and conservatives for the last 30 years, every time a Republican politician stands in front of them, they talk about getting more money to the military? Why do they cheer for that every time?
Because obviously a good part of it, or part of it, comes back to them. I think everyone's, it must be, you get up there and let's say you think you're an honest guy and somehow you finally take $10,000, a tiny sum, relatively small sum, and you kind of know it's right, you kind of think it's wrong, but you do it. All right, well, then you can't very well complain when your Democrat colleague across the aisle steals a million. You go to scold him. He says, hey, you're a thief too. Well, I only took 10,000. Well, get with the program. Well, it's your fault, not mine.
Well, I understand the politicians.
Like I did. What's that?
I understand the politicians. We know they're bought and paid for. I know that Tom Cotton goes and spouts his little warmongering on Fox every chance he gets because he's getting paid by the defense industry to keep his power, and he has his eyes set on the presidency, and he knows that he has to play the game to fatten the defense contractors' wallets to have access to the. What I'm asking is, why do the American people, why does the average Republican voter wrap themselves in the flag and cheer for a Pentagon that cannot pass an audit? They have been shown to have misplaced or cannot account for somewhere between $8 and $21 trillion. And the response from the average so-called fiscal conservative Republican is to cheer when Donald Trump comes out and says, I'm going to get the military an extra $50 billion a year. And they cheer for that. The average taxpayer, the average Republican, the average conservative is getting nothing from any of these things. It is bankrupting our nation. It is destroying our future, our children's inheritance of this country. And yet conservatives, they will do it this next campaign cycle. Republicans will come out and pander to them that they are taking care of the military, that they are going to make sure that those darn Democrats don't cut military budgets. They're still going to cheer for it, yet they are getting nothing from it.
Well, the media, once you're in power, whether you're Republican or Democrat, the media really is really on your side. And so you've got the people all brainwashed. Everything's propaganda. That's part of it. And part of it may be that there's some sort of a supra-intelligence that actually runs it. And people who would complain finally realize there's no point. Look, I have a decent life. I can play golf with my buddies. I don't have any particular money worries. My kids are doing okay. I'll say a prayer. Maybe God will work it out. On the $21 trillion to $23 trillion you say is missing in the Pentagon budgets, no one realizes this. There are just a few people who even realize this. You do. I do. The woman who brought it to light was a woman named Catherine Austin Fitz,
right.
A professor at Michigan State named Skidmore.
Right.
Verified it. You know, we've never allocated that much money in the history of the United States of America. That much money has never been even allocated or presumably spent. But that is the amount that's missing. It has been spent. It somehow or another, it's been created. It's been spent. This is the great mystery. Where is it? Where did it go? And it can only go to one of two things, Mike. One is a secret space program. That could be conceivable. You could spend that kind of money on that sort of thing. And the other, some people think, are massive underground bases. That could be part of it because there's a great deal of cost in producing that sort of thing. I don't know, but hey, you and I complain. But look, enjoy life as best you can because there's nothing we can do about it.
Well,
it's going to come. It may come crashing down. Then we'll regret that too. I don't want anything to crash.
Exactly.
I'm not looking forward to that either.
That's exactly what's going to happen. It's going to come crashing down, and everyone's going to look around and they're going to blame the other side. And
sure.
That's what's so aggravating to me because I got to tell you, when it comes to this foreign policy stuff, a lot of the blame, I would say. A majority of the blame rests at the feet of conservatives and Republicans who have bought this war machine, hook, line, and sinker. Rudy Giuliani right now is a big hero of every Trump supporter because he hitched his wagon to Donald Trump. Rudy Giuliani is a warmonger, and he is part of this problem. But people just, because he's got an R behind his name, because he likes Trump, he's off the hook.
Well, my problem with Giuliani, it goes back to anyone who was around during 9/11.
Yeah.
All this business started with 9/11,
right?
And no one in the media will tell you the truth about 9/11. This
right.
is when it started, and people today many are too young to even know what 9/11 was. I mean, they'll see the things on TV, but our war cranked up over in Afghanistan after the attack on the World Trade Center, and there's so many questions about who was behind that. We'll frankly never know the truth, maybe 100 years from now when we're dead and gone.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my two cents. I appreciate you letting me talk. Okay?
Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate the call.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've come on here for four and a half years now and explained to you I am the only anti-war person on radio in Central Mississippi that I know of. oh, a lot of people grumble when Trump gave people cover to say, yeah, these wars have been going on too long. And we know these wars have been going on too long. But it's not just that the wars are going on too long. We were in Syria too long when we were in there for one day. We were in Iraq too long when we were there for one day. It's not the length of the engagement. It's that conservatives and Republicans seem to kind of refuse to understand or admit to themselves that you have, and I did it too. I did it too. Back in the 1990s, I was a big Dick Cheney fan. Huge Donald Rumsfeld fan, because I felt like they were tough, because I was young and stupid. But we fail to understand and admit that people within our side, people with R's behind their names, people who say nice things about Donald Trump, they're psychopaths. They're psychopaths and war profiteers. They do not care about the men and women of the military. They do not care. They are pawns to them, meat puppets. As far back as Vietnam, Richard Nixon going into the 1968 elections, the story is that Kissinger was sent to derail the peace talks that might have ended the Vietnam War in 1968 because Richard Nixon wanted to keep it as a campaign issue. How many Americans, how many innocent Vietnamese died between what could have been the end of that war in 1968 and 1975 during those 7 years? But because Henry Kissinger's a Republican and Richard Nixon's a Republican, we don't want to talk about those things. There's certainly enough blame to go to Johnson. He's a Democrat, so we can talk about Johnson getting us involved in a war we never should have gotten involved with. But we don't dare talk about the fact that a Republican came and extended that war for another 7 years, costing tens of thousands of Americans' lives and probably hundreds of thousands or millions of Vietnamese lives. We refuse to talk about those because they're on our side. We don't talk about our side. Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolf. I can name the psychopaths in Washington, D.C., up to and including Mike Pompeo. But no, Mike Pompeo was loyal to Donald Trump, so Mike Pompeo's one of the good guys. And there you go. You're right back in the trap again. Mike Pompeo will be on the political scene in 2022 or 2024, either as a senator or as a president or a vice presidential candidate. And because he was loyal to Donald Trump, we'll overlook the fact that he's a warmongering psychopath that came from the CIA. And we'll support him because he's got an R behind his name. And he was nice to Donald Trump. And they will trap you right back into the next war. How many people during the Trump administration said, oh, this Afghanistan war has been going on too long. This Iraq war has been going on too long. We've spent trillions of dollars and nothing's changed over there. We're not getting anything from it. And then you heard Trump say, we really need to go after Iran. And you went, yeah. Because the guy with the R, the guy that you worship, the guy that you like says, this should be our next target. Oh, those old wars that the other guys started, they're no good. But my guy's new war? We definitely need to stay in Syria and steal their oil because Trump said it was a good idea. No, that's a war crime. Trump is a war criminal. As is Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush, certainly Richard Nixon, and Johnson, they're all war criminals. And I would imagine I'd have to kind of look at exactly how bad of a war criminal Ronald Reagan might have been. And I know this is off-putting to a lot of people, but if other countries did what our country has done in foreign policy stuff, and this is not, oh, you blame America for everything. No. If Russia invades Iraq, if Russia invades Syria and levels the place, we would call that a war crime. If Russia goes in and starts stealing the oil from Syria, we call it a war crime. People refuse to see this stuff. And again, as I just talked to a caller about, not only do you accept it, you cheer for it. I'll tell you what I think's behind it in just a minute. Stay with me.
A werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain.
Got a short segment now, and then I'm going to come back and talk about this soldier asking what his buddies blew up for. we're seeing the mess that's in Afghanistan right now. I've got some ideas. Which I've been around a lot of Republicans and conservatives during the past 20 years. Really about the last 17 years. I've been pretty hardcore anti-war. It didn't take very long in Afghanistan or Iraq to realize, oh, what we're doing is terrible. I should have known that throughout the Clinton administration, and I should have known that with Gulf War I. But I didn't. I was too stupid and blind, and I was drinking the Republican Kool-Aid. But boy, it became real apparent to me by about 2003, 2004 that what we were doing was really bad. And so I've been around a lot of conservatives and Republicans who have cheered on this war machine, thinking this is some kind of American exceptionalism. I think Republicans and conservatives in this particular area are very confused, and I'll talk about that in just a second. But one of the things that sticks in my craw, too, is this idea that America has nothing to apologize for. If anybody goes around and, you know, whether it's a president or anybody and says that we did something wrong, conservatives and Republicans get all incensed. America doesn't apologize. I think we should. I think the United States has a lot to apologize for. We funded ISIS. Do you know how many innocent people were slaughtered by ISIS? We turned parts of Syria into rubble using radical jihadists. And this is just one. We destroyed Libya. Just destroyed the place. Why do we not need to apologize? The first thing we need to do is we need to get the psychopaths out of power. The problem is they infest both parties. And so when your party, regardless of which side you're on, is in power, they convince you that what they're doing is right. And it was just that last administration that was doing it wrong. And the poor liberals used to have a vibrant anti-war movement, one of the few good things about the left. They dumped that because Barack Obama made it look cool to use predator drones. You want to know what creates a terrorist? You think it's our freedoms? You think it's because our little girls get to go to school? You think that's what really motivates a terrorist? Or do you think it's the predator that attacks an elementary school in Syria that might really enrage some people? This idea that it would be weakness for us to go around and apologize for anything. We need to apologize for electing and participating and allowing psychopaths to run our foreign policy here. It's not your fault. It's not my fault. It's no blemish on the greatness of the United States as a system. The American exceptionalism is based on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that set up a system where individuals could flourish on their own and have unprecedented opportunity throughout the history of the world. That's the exceptionalism of America. It's not military might. We've got a great military. Helps me sleep good at night knowing we've got a good military, but it doesn't help me sleep good at night to know they've expanded it all over the world and are just, frankly, just pissing people off all around the world. Eventually, people get tired of that. We have allowed psychopaths to run our foreign policy for decades now. And like a bully in the schoolyard, eventually the little guys get together and go, you know what, we're just about done with it. Now how they may dump the dollar. You're going to feel it then. you're going to feel it then. We've made Russia and China besties because of our belligerence with both of them. They decide to go ahead and dump the dollar. It's going to be some problems for you, for your family, for your children. They might not have to fire a shot to bring us to our knees. But this idea that America is just everything we do is right and how we never, ever admit to doing anything wrong. We are the world's savior. I got to tell you, there are billions of people around the world that do not see it that way because they've been on the receiving end of some pretty ugly activity. When I come back, I'll ask this guy's question, this soldier's question. My heart breaks for these troops. It has got to be just, I can't imagine how demoralizing it is. If you've done tours in Afghanistan or seeing what's taking place right now, that's got to be very demoralizing. We'll unpack that when we come back. Stay with me.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and I'm warning you, you're getting something different. To me, it's almost like, haven't you ever had a friend that's got a drinking problem? Some kind of a addictive problem, maybe that they are just in complete denial of, and you just got to face them and say, look, you've got a drinking problem. You need to change something. So you need some help. That's really what I feel like when I talk to conservatives about foreign policy stuff. It's my belief. Maybe you think you're hitting on all cylinders. Maybe you think that the military just doesn't have enough money. Maybe the fact that we spend as much as the nine next countries, including Russia, China, India, that we just don't spend enough. We spend $1 trillion a year that we don't have, but maybe that's just not enough. That's the same thinking that the public education people say, isn't it? Oh, yeah, public education's been failing for forever. It's just we just need 10% more money. We'll fix it all. And then they get that 10%, and what do you know? They need 10% more, and the problems get worse. Conservatives and Republicans need to rethink. And the first thing you need to do is when you go to these rallies, when Michael Guest and Cindy Hyde Smith and Roger Wicker go to campaign to get reelected, you're not sheep. You need to call them out and say, what the hell are you doing with $1 trillion a year? You see the mess you create in Afghanistan, Libya, Syria? Right now we're bombing Somalia. Same for you Democrats. Rediscover your anti-war roots. I know you love to spend money on everything. I don't even care if you use the talking point. We sure could feed a lot of homeless if we weren't fighting these foreign wars. That's fine with me. I'd rather see the homeless fed than indiscriminate bombing across the Middle East based on just warmongers' words, and that's what we get. So an Afghanistan vet was quoted in a piece I saw, and he said, quote, I mean, why did my friend get blown up? For what? This is a guy named Tom Amenta. I think he did two or three tours of Afghanistan. Obviously lost some friends over there. I mean, why did my friend get blown up? For what? Well, I'll tell you, your friend got blown up for Halliburton, for Raytheon, for Lockheed Martin, for the CIA, for the power of the politicians who sent him over there, for the heroin. That's why your friend got blown up. Your friend got blown up because the American people are so easily led around by the nose to support the sacrifice of these soldiers and of our dollars because they got scared. We're seeing right now with COVID, you've seen people go into this mass hysteria over a disease that kills 0.3% of people, and most of those are over the age of 80 years old, yet we've upended our entire way of life because they've scared everybody about this virus. Republicans can see that, but you can't see that you had an even less chance of being killed by a terrorist, but you committed $7 trillion, maybe $8 trillion now, to a war and slaughtered innocent people. Your chance of being killed by a terrorist was next to nothing. And if you want to talk about 9/11, don't worry. You stick around. You come back on September 10th. I believe that's a Friday. And I'll have 2 hours for you on 9/11. I don't know exactly what happened on 9/11, but I do know that what they told us is not what happened. Your friend was blown up. This soldier, this poor veteran, his friend was blown up along with thousands of others because Americans are no better than any other civilization that existed before us. Even with all of the visible corruption, we still support this military machine. Even with all the obvious problems with all of these foreign wars, there are people out there right now listening to the sound of my voice saying, well, yeah, this was a big mistake and Joe Biden's screwing it up, but we still do have to counter Russia and China and North Korea and Iran. Itching for that next war. Because now you're scared that Russia and Iran and China and North Korea are going to come take your stuff. That stuff was never going to happen. And to not be able to follow the money at this point, I mean, come on. I've covered it for 4.5 years. I've got a small reach, but there's plenty you can read out there of these big, fat defense contractors. And now they're woke. I hope that maybe that makes people angry. Raytheon and Lockheed Martin are retraining all their white executives to get in touch with their innate racism. Does that make you angry enough to maybe not want to cheer for Roger Wicker telling you he's going to help rebuild the military? And I believe that this guy's question, why were his friends blown up? I think it's because a lot of conservatives have confused militarism with patriotism. And I'm saying this from myself. I did this during the 1990s. I felt like the fact that I, just by sheer luck, it's luck that I was born in Queens, New York, and not in Kabul, Afghanistan. It's luck. I didn't earn that. I just popped up, and I had a middle-class family in New York. I moved to Mississippi. But during the 1990s, I got a rush of pride knowing that we had a military. I love watching the military flyovers. I mean, the machinery that we have is amazing. The professionalism of our military is stunning. You can just see video of soldiers walking from behind across a field, and you can kind of tell when it's Americans and when it's basically any other country. Russia looks pretty proficient. But you can tell when it's, you know, Afghan force. They don't walk with the same assuredness. I mean, there's just something about our military that is powerful. And during the 1990s, I loved to see that power exercised. Kind of gave me a rush. Gave me a reason to hang a flag out there that we went over there and we handled up on Saddam Hussein's Iraqi troops. Within 3 days, we had them on their knees. But that kind of thinking has led us to the rest of it. At least I did abandon that thinking. And now my support of the troops is not my support of them crushing another smaller country. My support of the troops is saying they should be a last resort to send outside of our borders to attack another country. We should be protecting our troops. We should be standing in the gap between these politicians and psychopaths in our foreign policy establishment and our troops. Anybody who signs up to defend the United States should be used for that purpose and that purpose only, not some adventurism because of a pipeline or because some other country says, this country's mean to us. Can you come over here and handle it for us? Because that's happening a lot, too. This guy's friends were blown up because Democrats and liberals are too stupid to see how their own leaders tricked them into standing down while their politicians rake in cash from the war profiteers. So they got the whole kit and caboodle. They got conservatives for decades and decades. And for the last decade, they've had Democrats, too, because Barack Obama. These defense contractors contribute to both parties. And this guy's friends, his friends were blown up, and many more will be blown up in the future because Americans are more interested in honoring the dead soldier than they are in protecting the soldier that's still alive by getting them out of harm's way or refusing to allow the psychopaths running our show to send them into harm's way. Oh, we're very good about contributing to tunnels for towers. Those commercials are all over the place. I love what they're doing for those men and women who have lost limbs. But it sure would be nice if we kind of multitasked there and maybe stopped the Dick Cheneys, stopped the John Kerrys, stopped the Hillary Clintons, stopped the Donald Rumsfelds from sending our kids over to lose a limb in the first place for no good reason. And here's where I think, and again, I have to go back to my two things I draw on, my own thinking back in the 1990s and early 2000s, when I cheered for the Afghanistan war and I cheered for the Iraq war. I argued with a friend of mine. We need to do something is what I said. As a complete chicken hawk, I didn't serve in the military, but boy, was I proud to send other people's kids halfway around the world to fight and die in the sand. So I draw on that experience and also all of the conservatives and Republicans I've been around when they talk about these things. I think the average Republican and conservative think being anti-war means you're some kind of sissy hippie. This is decades of propaganda led by these warmongers that has tricked you into believing that the greatness of our country is not in our founding documents, but in its military might. And the defense contractors, the warmongers, have made massive amounts of money duping you into believing to oppose war is somehow to be anti-American. To oppose sending our troops into harm's way and insist on protecting the troops by not sending them there is somehow anti-troop. You're not a patriot. You think that opposing war makes you some kind of a dirty pacifist. I'm not a pacifist at all. If somebody comes and decides they want to be aggressive towards the United States itself, not our partners, not American interests, but actually the United States as a country, oh man, unleash the hounds of hell. That's when it's great to have a strong military. It's a great deterrent. It doesn't cost $1 trillion a year. You could probably do it for about $200 billion and still eclipse the rest of the world. But that's not near as profitable for the warmongers and the defense contractors, is it? And so I believe a lot of conservatives and Republicans have been duped into this idea that, you know, libertarians are notoriously anti-war. And that makes us some kind of dirty, hippie, pacifist group. We're just not dealing with reality. Well, you're dealing with reality, right? There's reality going on the ground right now in Afghanistan. It has been for every day for the past 20 years. How's that reality working out for you? We never should have gotten involved in these things. Conservatives have got to wake up. You've got to quit cheering for this military adventurism. You've got to quit confusing militarism with patriotism. Because the militarism is what's going to destroy the country that you're so proud of. I'll be right back. All right, I've only got a few minutes of today's show left. I'll probably be talking about this. This is just a horrific event that's taking place in Afghanistan right now. It's going to get worse during the day. We'll have plenty to talk about tomorrow. I'll take some calls tomorrow. I know people have been calling in. I'm trying to say my piece. I'm telling you, conservatives and Republicans need to be shaken awake on this issue. This is not a Biden mess. Biden made it worse. But this is decades long in the making. These invasions, these occupations solve nothing. And I can't imagine the number of people who are ready to lash out at the United States right now in Afghanistan. Can you imagine if your son came to you and said, I'm going to cooperate with the Americans, and the parents are like, oh, please don't. You know, the Taliban are going to come after you. No, the Americans are going to take care of us. They're going to take care of all this. I'm going to help them because we don't like the Taliban, do we? And the parents say, no, we don't like the Taliban, but I'm worried for you. Well, the Americans are going to take, and now the Americans are out, and these poor Afghanis who helped us along the way are just left to die. Many of them will die today. They'll be slaughtered. And what are those parents and the brothers and sisters, cousins, what do they think as they watch the American planes fly out with American citizens, leaving all these people who have been in a war-torn country now for 20 years? And you can say, well, they're always fighting with each other anyway. Yeah, but they don't have us to blame for it. We like to stick our nose in somewhere just so we can get enough of the blame. You know, and I talk about being, you know, anti-war. I remember I kind of came out to my friends as anti-war 16, 17 years ago. I'm still standing. It's okay. When you get into your groups today and someone says, you know, we just didn't do enough. The rules of engagement, we should have really leveled the place. You think that would have solved it? It's okay to speak up and say, no, we just never should have been there in the first place. We've got to stop invading countries. I did this. I lived that experience. And I got some of those confused dog head tilts. What do you mean? You don't support the troops? No, I don't support needless foreign wars that enrich big corporations and pipeline people. When we're accomplishing, it's not protecting our freedom. And now what we've done is we've created a new hotbed of terrorism by angering everybody who might have even been sympathetic. There might have been people who were legitimately against the Taliban. Taliban's probably going to have some pretty good recruiting days, some by force. The people they don't murder, but some people are going to say, you know what, they're going to say, I was on the wrong side with these Americans. They just tucked tail and ran. Well, the problem is not the leaving. The problem is having gone there in the first place. The leaving's a catastrophe. I'm not carrying any water for Joe Biden. Good Lord. What an imbecile. But he's obviously got imbeciles and psychopaths underneath him, too. And they're refocusing their efforts. Don't think that, you know, it would be one thing if this was just a mess. It was going to be a mess anyway. I swear, I can't watch conservative media today. I just can't do it. And if I get a comment out of Trump that says, Joe Biden made a giant mess of this. I set it up to where this was going to go perfectly. No. You had 4 years to get us out of there. You don't get to backseat drive in this thing now. It was never going to be easy. It was never going to be clean. But the problem was it's been lost since the day we put our first boots on the ground in 2001. This was not going to be successful. And for all you Iran war hawks out there, you seriously, you want to do this again? It is okay to go into your friend groups and come out as against these wars. Donald Trump gave you enough cover to start getting a little bit of a head of steam to this stuff. There are some tweets I had here. Some guy named Robbie Starbuck, he says, I'm anti-war, but the problem is the rules of engagement. We just need to really let our military loose. You know what you do? You just create more terrorism. And now, whether it is organic or staged, we will now be facing more of the war on terror. Maybe more attacks here in the United States or attacks around the world that will be blamed on now the Taliban as they have declared their new caliphate. And today they are chanting death to America. And this just tees us up for War on Terror 2. Conservatives, I got to tell you, it's almost up to y'all to change your minds on this and stop falling for the same thing over and over. See you tomorrow.
No matter Bye. How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try.